Welcome into the Full Tilt Devi Podcast, brought to you by the Full Tilt Dynasty Podcast on the True North Fantasy Football Network. And now for your hosts.
I'm John Arrington at Dynasty Coach A, and my fun fact of the day is it is illegal to own just one guinea pig in Switzerland because they are considered social animals and they need love.
That makes sense. I mean, you don't want them to be depressed over there, right? So I understand that, I guess. But what's up? My name's Andy. I'm at AstarFF on Twitter. My fun fact of the day this week, I guess in honor of the NBA draft this evening, I gathered up all my champion NBA jerseys from the 90s and put them for sale on eBay. And right now, I have like a Michael Jordan and a Magic Johnson, but right now the one that is leading in auctions right now is Dan Marley from the Suns, if you remember him. It's at $66. I don't know what's up with Dan Marley, but apparently he's popular.
Hey, that works. Well, as you can tell, our fearless host, the host with the most time on his hands, is not here tonight. I am the host with the least amount of time on his hands, but yet I am here tonight. It's all new to me, so you know we're going to try and make this as seamless as possible. But luckily, I have at AstarFF with me tonight, and we can talk some Devi. I believe that we had some like introductions that you wanted to get into with possibly some teams team over unders or something like that you were looking for.
That, and I just want to knock out a couple of news issues before we really talk about that. But Arch Manning was what we were going to talk about at the top here.
That's right. I almost forgot.
Committing to Texas. I think that's kind of the big news story of the day. Even Adam Schefter and those guys are tweeting about that. Obviously, Manning, the name carries some gravitas. I've seen a couple overreactions so far. Some people are saying, oh, RIP Ewers. I think this is actually beneficial for Ewers. I think it was obviously it was going to be Texas. I think Alabama was in the mix. And then some people had mentioned Georgia a while back. I don't think Georgia really had a chance.
No.
But with him going to Texas, I think it actually helps Ewers because it's going to help bring in some of these talented 2023 wide receivers like Jonte Cook, who you're probably more familiar with than I am. You've already gone over these classes, but some of these higher four stars that are still kind of on the fence might see that, Arch Manning's there. Let's go to Texas. And, that's going to inevitably help Ewers' situation. So I think this is actually good for Ewers. I think it can only help him as it helps the program. And really, Ewers is the only one that can hurt himself. He's going to be able to start this year.
Yeah.
So that's the only way, his stock's going to go down is if he doesn't play well.
As soon as the news came out, which I think most of us expected it to be Texas, I guess you can never count Alabama out, but at the same time, I'm also like pretty hopeful for Ty Simpson. So I was like, please don't go to Bama. But like you said, people started freaking out on Twitter. Like, what's going to happen to Ewers? Is Ewers transferring again? All of a sudden I'm like, guys, like, this isn't bad for Ewers. I mean, obviously anything can happen. It's college football. We have no true way of saying that, it's going to be this perfect transition and, everything's going to be amazing in Texas for years to come. But that's kind of what we expect. But, the normal transition period would be that Ewers would play this year. Then he would still play next year, and then Arch Manning would take over and probably be a stud after that. Now, can we guarantee that? Of course not. But I think that's what is expected by, at least most people. I definitely don't see Ewers transferring. And like you said, if anything, it's probably a good thing. So, I definitely don't see it as anything bad for Ewers, but we still haven't seen Ewers. He's really young. We haven't seen him actually get on the field. And, he will definitely have a very good prospect and somebody getting a lot of hype breathing down his neck. So, maybe there will be a little bit of a concern there.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously if he smashes this year, it's not going to be a question when Arch Manning gets on campus next year, but if he's like mediocre, which I'm not saying that he will be, I don't think he will be, but I don't think it's out of the question if he, starts to struggle And, you know, come year two and Arch Manning's there, people might start, you know, calling for a switch. I don't think that'll happen, but it is something that Quinn Ewers, you know, will have to think about. And, you know, like I said, that's a good thing. You know, a little competition, you know, never hurt anybody.
I also think the fact that he already transferred once kind of like freaks people out, but I kind of like, he made it seem, whether it's true or not, that he always wanted to be at Texas, you know, and just like the way everything worked out was, you know, he ended up at Ohio State, and obviously it's a great program and all that, but he wanted to be at Texas. So I don't really look at the transfer as a bad thing. Like, oh, he couldn't beat out CJ Stroud or, you know, whatever. I just think he wanted to be at this team or with this team the entire time. Everything changed, and then it was like, hey, this is a good time for me to go ahead and make that transfer. But why don't we go ahead and take a little break, and then we will be back in just a little bit to dive in.
Aaron Jones in his career has been very good as a pass catcher. He's kind of, in my opinion, the de facto wide receiver one on this team right now.
He has to be.
He had a 12.9% target share. You absolutely love to see that. His fantasy points per game at 15.3. It's good for 11th. Just phenomenal. And his PFF grade, 82.8. Fantastic player.
All right. So that was another one of our great clips. And now we are going to actually be starting a little game. I don't have any idea. I think they were supposed to tell me what was going on with this game. I don't know if they actually did or not. I did not see it if they did, but I'm excited, and here we go.
So coming in from the producer seat here, the game is going to be over under, and we're looking at two situations this week that have one thing in common, and that is they are historic programs with brand new coaches. So guys, this year, are you over or under on the Oklahoma Sooners and Florida Gators for wins?
All right. So I guess I'll start off by saying I'm a Florida Gator fan. That has been very difficult for quite a while now. But it's really difficult for me to say over on that team just because everything that's happened, you know, with just everything. The coaching situation was just so much of a nightmare last year. Obviously, I have high expectations and high hopes this year. But I think the good bet, just being a Florida fan recently, especially, the good bet would be the under.
Yeah. So, yeah, Napier comes in. I'm just running down their schedule here. So they open up with Utah. Then they get into some some SEC schedule work with Kentucky. They get another break with Southern Florida. But then it's Tennessee, Eastern Washington, Missouri, LSU, and then they get sort of into the meat of the schedule with Georgia, Texas A&M, and then it kind of softens up for a bit with South Carolina, Vanderbilt, and Florida State. So I'm looking at that. I say I'm thinking giving them a win at USF, giving a win at Eastern Washington. Those are actually both home games. I think they can beat LSU, Brian Kelly's first year there. The quarterback situation's murky. They lost some talent on offense.
Especially if Boutte's not playing.
Right, and we talked about that last week on this show, actually. There's a chance that, you know, either he doesn't play at all or plays, you know, limited. And then I'd also give him the win at, you know, the last two games of the year on the road at Vanderbilt and at Florida State. Florida State's, you know, kind of a program in shambles. It's trying to work out themselves out of a hole, too. So that puts them at 6 wins. And if I'm going to, right now they're over-unders at 7. I think that's a really, really good bet for where they're going to end up. Sorry, my cat's bothering me right now for this, but South Carolina is another game. They got Spencer Rattler coming in where I could see them, you know, getting a win there at home in the swamp. And, Missouri, LSU, I think those are both games that they can win. So I think I'm taking the over, actually. I love Billy Napier as a coach. I love Anthony Richardson as an athlete. I think he's going to be a great college quarterback. I'm not sure, you know, if it's going to translate to the NFL, but it's certainly something that can win games there. And Billy Napier brings over Montrell Johnson, who was a great running back with him over at Louisiana Lafayette. So I think this offense has potential to win 8 games. So if I'm betting it, I would take the over.
Nice. I definitely, what you said makes a lot of sense. I just didn't want to be the Homer fan, you know, that just says over just right. because. And I'm really not that kind of guy, but I didn't want to be accused of it, especially after, you know, I admitted. But, I mean, I probably wouldn't have admitted that I'm a Florida fan. You know, it's been really ugly lately, guys.
It's been a while.
And real quick, Andy Hartman said, I thought this was a midweek tilt for a minute. That'll be back in season. And yeah, I have a lot to talk about with Tommy T. So we will definitely get back to that. Honestly, it is the SEC. They have, you know, a decent schedule, of course. They have to play Georgia and all that. But 7 wins really isn't that bad. It's really not that tough. So maybe I should say the over. But I guess the more interesting one is, yeah, I'm going to be a homer. There we go. The more interesting one is going to be Oklahoma, I think, because I really think especially when you start getting into those half wins and everything, you know, there's a reason for that, and it's because, you know, Vegas truly believes that it's going to be right around that spot. You know, and it makes a lot of sense. With a team in flux, you know, brand new everything just about. I love some of the pieces that they have going to that team, but it's kind of how I feel with Florida. You know, just everything's so new. It's really hard to get a feel for that team, and I guess that's, you know, a lot of college football. But how do you feel about this Oklahoma team?
So this is such a hard read for me. You obviously have Brent Venables, first time head coach coming in, great defensive coordinator at Clemson, no doubt about that, which it's interesting to see a defensive coach in the Big 12. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But again, looking at their schedule, they opened it up with a bit of a cakewalk with UTEP and Kent State at home. Then, you know, they get Nebraska on the road, and then they get into that Big 12 schedule with Kansas State, TCU, Texas, Kansas, Iowa State, Baylor, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech to finish it off. This is a tricky one for me because they obviously lose everybody once Lincoln Riley leaves town. They lose Caleb Williams. They lose their wide receiver, Mario Williams. Both go to USC. They lose some of their recruits that were supposed to come in this year. They do get the quarterback from UCF, Dylan Gabriel, who's, you know, another decent college quarterback. Marvin Mims is still there. They lost Spencer Rattler. They lost Austin Stogner. So there's a lot of missing pieces on this team. So I think there's just a lot of things that could go wrong, you know, with so many new things happening. And the Big 12 is, you know, it's a good conference. Kansas State can put up points. TCU, Texas is obviously going to be, we think they're going to be electric with Quinn Ewers and that all those wide receivers. Baylor, you know, is the reigning Big 12 champions, and they have to play at Iowa State. You never want to count Matt Campbell out of a game. Oklahoma State, like, same thing. They're always good. And Texas Tech brings in the Western Kentucky offensive coordinator who, you know, they just broke every passing record in college last year. So really, I mean, outside of like UTEP, Kent State, West Virginia, and maybe Nebraska, I'm not sure that I'm guaranteeing any of those wins. Kansas, I guess. So, you know, there's like 5 wins that I'm really comfortable saying that they're going to win. Outside of that, you know, if they need to win 5 more games to get to 10, I'm not sure that that's possible. So I'm smashing the under here, and I'm much more confident in this one. I think they're probably a 7-win team, maybe 8 wins at best. But this is a team that's in the middle of a pretty big change, and I think it's going to take a year or two before they get it, you know, up to speed.
Yeah, I agree. It's so tough. I mean, I guess if anything, you know, you could say that like Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Texas are all home games. So, you know, like that helps a little bit, you know, but I don't know. I just, whenever I see, I guess you know, I'm definitely more of the, you know, thinking of like the NFL side and everything, but when I see so much changing with the team, you know, the coach, the quarterback, you know, wide receivers, everything, it's just so hard to believe in it. And so how am I going to possibly go to a, you know, to a casino or jump on an app and bet the over? So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and smash the under on that one. And I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to go over. I just, under seven for Florida, just, it seems too, it's too low. It's just too low.
Too low. They can do it. That schedule it is. Gives them some favors. They can make it happen.
It is. Well, why don't we go ahead and take another break, and then we will be back in just a minute.
Ambiguity is a really strong thing when you, like, take it into account, because it means value and it means fear. Two things that are really important in the marketplace that we play fantasy football in.
Mm-hmm.
Ambiguity means that this player that is so high that we love them above everyone else has such a potential to come down. And the same thing goes for this player who you're getting much lower. And what ends up kind of superseding that is just your opinion of the players and the various archetypes.
Always gotta love the archetypes.
But some truth.
He is, absolutely. But we are going to go ahead and dive into some preseason All-Americans. But first, I want to show you how to be an All-American yourself. And that is with Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy football. Draft your team with no in-season management. Get the optimal score each week of the season and have a shot at over $10 million in total prize money in their Best Ball Mania 3 contest. Head to underdogfantasy.com or the App Store now. Sign up with promo code. Oh, I forgot the promo code. I think it's Full Tilt.
One word.
Sorry about that. Full Tilt. And Underdog is going to match your first deposit up to $100. Again, Underdog Fantasy. Sign up with your promo code Full Tilt and draft your Best Ball Mania 3 team today. Andy, nice. Are you ready to dive in? Are you ready to dive into some preseason All-Americans?
Absolutely.
All right. So apparently Phil Steele creates a preseason All-American list every year, and it's that time of year. You know, we have nothing going on. No spring games are over. There's really literally nothing going on. And so it's time to just start predicting and projecting who the hell is going to be good this year. But I believe that Andy has some questions about maybe some players on this list.
Yeah. First of all, yeah, Phil Steele, great job every year with his college football magazine. He does like a yearly breakdown of every single team in college football. So this is kind of like the preeminent, the first preseason, you know, preview, I guess, before, you know, we start getting into summer practices. And this is a dead zone. We're all just sort of starving for content. So it's nice to get something out here before everyone gets back to work. I'll just quickly mention the QBs. I didn't really have an issue with it. He put Bryce Young on his first team, CJ Stroud on his second team, and Caleb Williams on his third team, and then Jake Haener as his fourth team All-American. I think the top three, nobody's going to argue with you. You know, they might mix and match the first two, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, depending on who you ask. Caleb Williams as a third team is fine. Jake Haener might raise some eyebrows, but at the end of the day, you know, this is a college All-American list, and he's a great quarterback at Fresno State. He's going to throw for, you know, 3,000-4,000 yards, no problem. And they've got a high-powered offense, so no problems with that. Where I started to have some issues was with the running backs.
Yep.
And it started right with the first team. Obviously, has Bijan Robinson as a first-team All-American, which I'm totally cool with. But the other first-team All-American was Deuce Vaughn, which, I, you know, we're going to talk about Deuce Vaughn, but I'll just run through the rest of it. Second team was Chris Rodriguez and Travion Henderson. Third team was Sean Tucker and Lou Nichols from Central Michigan. And fourth team was Braylon Allen and Zach Charbonnet. So my issue with – so I got it. Couple issues with the running backs. First of all, I'll just talk about Deuce Vaughn. He's Kansas State. He's entering his third season. Just a little guy, 5'6", 172 pounds. He did have a, you know, amazing year last year. 235 attempts, 1,400 yards, 18 touchdowns to go along with 49 catches, 460 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Looking at some of the metrics, 54% of his team rush attempts. He had a reception market share of 24%, 2.51 yards per team play. So there's not a question in my mind that he can play. But, you know, being that this is a Devy show, I will look at it somewhat through a Devy lens. Where I don't see him translating as a NFL running back. I think his best case scenario is Darren Sproles. It's a ceiling, but even Sproles had 20 pounds on Deuce Vaughn. He's just not built like an NFL running back. But, you know, since this is an All-American list, we'll look at it as an All-American. I just don't think he's going to have as dominant of a season as he did in 2021. And I'm basing that on one major change in the Kansas State offense, and that's their quarterback. So in 2020 and 2021, he was obviously playing with Skylar Thompson, who never had a rushing market share above 2.5% in that time. But now they're getting Nebraska transfer Adrian Martinez, who's never had less than a 25% rushing market share and never less than 500 rushing yards in a season. Additionally, and I realize this is a product of talent and offenses that they run, but he hasn't had a running back finish with more than 12 receptions since his freshman year. I'm not saying that Deuce Vaughn's going to have less than 12 receptions. I'm just saying that's, you know, what Adrian Martinez has had to work with at Nebraska and the offenses he's typically running. So I do believe Vaughn is a phenomenal college talent. I think he deserves to be named on this list for sure. But I think there's at least one other guy who, you know, we'll mention later, and people that are underrated who deserves to have that first team honors above him.
Yeah, I mean, it gets really tough, you know, when you're talking about college football versus Devy, and you know, we have the Devy mindset, and so we want it to be players right. That we think are going to be studs and all that, and he's just thinking strictly college football. But I also understand what you're saying with Adrian Martinez. I think that, you know, he was never prolific, you know, at Nebraska by any means, and I don't think it's going to be very different, you know, coming over there. But I, you know, he's never had over 600 yards rushing. So, like, while that's way more than what we were dealing with before, I still don't know if it's going to be enough to truly, you know, like, change the outlook for Deuce too much. And, I mean, Deuce is never going to be an NFL running back. Like, well, I mean, I never say never, but like, he's probably not going to be an NFL running back. But the dude is just explosive as hell. I mean, he's just so good. So I don't want to count him out. And so if we're just strictly talking college football, which is basically what we're doing, I'm getting ready to start a C2C draft here pretty soon. We're actually wrapping up the NFL side right now, and then we're going to be diving into the campus side. And I'm going to be looking to try and get some Deuce Vaughn. You know, maybe I'll temper expectations a little bit with your concerns, but I really don't hate him being in the tier one here, just because of what I think he is. I mean, he could lose 500 yards rushing, or like a combination of rushing and receiving, and still have more rushing and receiving yards than Bijan Robinson, you know? So like, it's when you're just thinking strictly college football, I really don't think it's that big of a deal, but I understand your concerns though.
No, you're absolutely right. And I do think you mentioned campus to Canton. I think there's a chance that he might play a fourth season just based on the you know, pro prospect concerns. So I think he is a good campus to Canton draft pick, because I think he does have a spot in the NFL. I just don't know if it's going to be fantasy relevant. But also, I think he's a great college football player who's going to produce fantasy points if you're playing in that campus to Canton format.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, he had almost 1,900 yards total from scrimmage last year. So, I mean, he could lose quite a bit and still be one of the top players in the game, you know?
Right? Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and dive into some of those other players. Obviously, one that's probably a little surprising is Trevion Henderson being in tier two. He was very close to Bijan Robinson just in raw stats in year one.
Right.
I don't expect that offense to get worse. I don't know about you. I mean, obviously they lost quite a bit, you know, offensively, but then they just completely backfilled it, and I mean they're right back where they could have or should have been.
Yeah, Trevion Henderson for me is like one of the best running back prospects we've seen in the last few years, and his stats reflect that. Last year as a true freshman, 183 attempts, 1,248 yards, 15 touchdowns, 27 catches, 312 yards, and 4 touchdowns. A 43.5% rush market share as a true freshman with a 73% backfield dominator. Both of those are 99th percentile freshman data points. And I think he's going to build on it, honestly. I don't expect Mayan Williams to get 500 yards again. He kind of got some yards early on in the season. Those yards are going to go to Travion now. Master Teague's out of the picture. They only bring one running back recruit in. He's a low four-star recruit, Dallin Hayden. I don't think we'll see any of him at all this year. I do think last year they brought in another freshman, Evan Pryor, who came in with Travion Henderson. I think he does see a bigger role in year two. He's still a little bit undersized as well, just floating around 200 pounds. So I think he'll kind of fill in that change of pace role of Mayan and Master T kind of take in those carries. But yeah, Travion Henderson for me is right up there with Bijan Robinson. I think he's going to be one of the better running backs statistically in college football this year. I think he's going to be in the top 2 to 3 statistic, you know, as far as rushing yards, touchdowns, receptions, everything, scrimmage yards. He's going to be right there at the top. So I'd comfortably bump Deuce Vaughn in favor of Travion Henderson as my first team running back. Like I said, I'm not trying to dog on Deuce Vaughn as a college football player. He's going to get his too. But if I'm picking a first team guy, give me Travion.
No, I can't really argue it. I love Travion. I honestly think, I mean, it's so difficult, especially when you're getting up into that tier. But me and my like normal co-host from the Debbie Devotional, Aaron Wilcox, we've compared Travion and Bijan to like Saquon and Ezekiel Elliott. You know, like they're both amazing running backs, but they just played the game differently. Doesn't really mean that like one's necessarily better than the other. But I mean, if you're gonna choose one to have the higher ceiling, it's probably gonna be Travion when it's all said and done. And like that kind of blows people's minds, but it's kind of true. You know, so it's hard to say because you know you don't want to just live on ceiling alone, obviously. But I don't think the Travion does that. But enough about that. I think there's some other players that we can talk about that were a little too low or even too high. Were there any other running backs that we needed to discuss?
I'll just mention Chris Rodriguez briefly. I think he was he second or third team?
He was second team as well.
Okay, so he's coming off a senior season. Well, it was his fourth season out of high school last year. First, he's a 5'11", 224 running back from Kentucky. Really good season last year, 225 attempts, 1,379 yards, 9 touchdowns, and 3 more touchdowns through the air. Again, 45% rush market share, backfield dominator, 64%. He's just sort of teetering on those experience-adjusted benchmarks for stats that are predictive of a top 24 NFL fantasy season. But again, you know, looking through that Debbie lens, I think he's a plotter that took 4 years to get above 30% of his team's carries. And he does have some off-the-field issues. He got a DUI this offseason. There was some question of whether or not he'd even be available at all this season. It seems like he's participating now in some team activities. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be playing the whole season. But, you know, aside from that, Kentucky's offense is going to look a little different this year as well. With Wandale Robinson obviously out of the picture. I think Wandale did open up a lot of opportunity for Chris Rodriguez in that RPO-heavy offense. But they do add some other playmaking freshmen with Dane Key and Berrien Brown, who are both low to four and high four-star guys, and they get transfer wide receiver from Virginia Tech, Tavian Robinson. But the offense, aside from you know those additions, it's going to look different because they got a new offensive coordinator with Rich Scangarello, who was 49ers QB coach last year. I'm not saying like that's going to mirror the 49ers offense at all. Obviously they use a lot of different running backs, but I do think it, you know, it's a new look, and some of these guys that were, you know, left off the list or posted, you know, in the third or fourth team, like a guy like Lou Nichols, who, you know, led the NCAA in rushing last year.
I'd much rather have Lou Nichols.
If we're just looking at pure college stats, and Lou Nichols doesn't have to worry about anybody competing in his backfield now. I think I would put someone like that above Chris Rodriguez on my second team.
I agree. I mean, he doesn't really have a receiving profile at all. And I mean, obviously that we're not talking Devy right now, but even just when you're talking about All-American, you should probably be able to do everything, you know, like that kind of thing. And he doesn't really have that. He's also gotten worse with efficiency every year as he's been given more and more of the rocks. So, you know, what if they give him more? And like you said, I mean, they brought in a different offensive coordinator. We have no idea what they're going to do. But if they give him even more touches this year, because he only had 225 last year, you know, then the efficiency could go down even more. I definitely don't. I mean, I don't really understand why he's here in the second, especially like you said, when guys like Lou Nichols are going beyond that, then you're probably just hating on the fact that it's like a small school and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if we're talking about college football, we're talking about college football, and Lou Nichols is going to be one of the best college football running backs this year, regardless of how you feel about him in Devy.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So, you know, as I tend to do on most of my pods, we're going a little bit long here, but why don't we touch on a couple of the other players that we might feel are a little too low, like Josh Downs. I love Josh Downs. You know, why is he so low? Why is he on the second team? You know, like, yeah. I know with Devy purposes, people are concerned about his size and whatever. But we're talking about college football right now. And Josh Downs, I mean, obviously there's a QB change. It really seems like Drake May is going to be taking over. And I feel like I'm like the biggest Drake May stan at this point. But I don't think it's going to be that much of a drop off. Now, obviously, it's a true freshman second year?
Josh Downs will confused be, on this be his third year.
No, Drake May.
Drake May, yeah, second year.
Second year, yeah. I always confuse. I wanted to say true freshman, but no, he's not. So, but yeah. Regardless, second year player coming in. I like the player in Drake May. I love Josh Downs. I don't think it's going to be that much of a drop off. Hopefully the offensive line and everything else can get fixed, but Josh Downs is going to get his. There's no reason for him to be second team.
He's third team.
Oh,
which is
okay, yeah.
Which is why it's so egregious. So just
yeah,
for,
I'm about to pass out.
Yeah, so the first team, obviously, JSN, Jordan Addison, Kayshon Boutte. I'm not sure that anyone's going to argue those three are probably the best wide receivers in college football right now. Second team, you got A.T. Perry, Quentin Johnson, Xavier Worthy. Third team, Jermaine Burton, Josh Downs, Cedric Tillman. And then the fourth team, Tank Dell, or Nathaniel Dell. Apparently, he goes by Tank now. Xavier Hutchinson and Dontayvion Wicks. But yeah, I completely agree. I think with Downs, who had one of the, you know, a great season last year, over 100 catches, 1,300 yards, just ridiculous 42.6% reception market share, 3.49 yards per team pass attempt. He's just a tough slot receiver. He's really dangerous after the catch, plays super fast. Obviously, they lose Sam Howell. But like you said, Drake May, we think, can put up similar numbers to Howell. And I just think with how good Downs is, an elite quarterback play isn't really necessary for him to explode. His ADOT was only about 8 yards. So he's doing most of his damage after the catch. So May just really needs to get him the ball on those short and intermediate routes. And then once he's got it in his hands, anything can happen. The other thing is, like, he did this last year without a viable number two receiving option. Antoine Green was fine as the X receiver. Bryson Nesbitt, there's a bit of a hive forming somewhere in the sewers of the campus to Canton community that he's going to break out this year. But he doesn't need somebody to, like, take that heat off of him. He's still going to get his no matter what. So he has him on the third team. I mean, with what's going on with Kayshon Boutte this season, I might even consider him putting him on the first team. Just based on, like, you know, what I think is going to happen this year. But definitely above A.T. Perry, Quentin Johnston, and Xavier Worthy. I think Quentin Johnston might be a better NFL receiver than Josh Downs, but if we're talking about, you know, college All-Americans, I think Josh Downs could have a better year.
I agree. And then I know, you know, Jermaine Burton was another one that was a little lower than probably most. Now, I'm actually one of the biggest Jermaine Burton haters, I guess, at this point. I don't actually hit the player, but I just I feel like people, just because he transferred to Alabama, people have just assumed that he's going to be the stud. He was not a stud in Georgia. And I mean, I understand the situation was not great. Brock Bowers doubled him up in stats. Like, you know, I understand. Once again, the situation was not great. But if you are a stud wide receiver, you're not going to have 500 yards. So I'm not saying that Jermaine Burton is terrible, but I don't think he's all of a sudden like a tier one player just because he went to Alabama, you know?
Yeah, and I've kind of like, I put it on the show sheet that he was underrated. Right now he's on the third team. I'm kind of wavering on that a bit myself after I started diving into the Alabama receivers, which we're going to talk about later on.
There's other players too.
This is just a very strange year for Alabama, which we'll talk about. But yeah, I mean, they bring in so many guys that I'm not sure Jermaine Burton is just going to be anointed as the wide receiver one. I think he could. He could definitely be, which is why I'm just going to say third team. All right, that seems okay. That's fair for him.
He needs to take a pretty giant leap to do it. And I'm not saying it's impossible. I will never say it's impossible, but he needs to do that. And I mean, he'll be given every opportunity. There's no one else that's there that's like a clear number one or anything like that. I like a lot of the players, and we'll talk about them, you know, a little bit later on. But another Alabama player that might have been a little bit of a snub from the list was Jahmyr Gibbs. And, you know, it's, I guess that one, it's just, it's a new situation. You know, Alabama has a lot of running backs. We know how Alabama uses their running backs. We know how Tommy T feels about Jahmyr Gibbs. Now, I personally love me some Gibbs. I don't really have the size concerns as much as Tommy T here. You know, I think 5'11", 200 is fine. Like, obviously, we would love for him to be 5'11", 220. It's not going to happen. But if he, I mean, especially if he, you know, at Alabama, if he can get up to 2'5", 205, 210, something like that, I think he'll be just fine. And the dude is just explosive and awesome. He didn't get a lot of run last year, you know, or really any year. But that offense at Georgia Tech just really wasn't anything all that exciting. So, you know, he only touched the ball 170 times, something like that. So, you know, but he had, 1,200 scrimmage yards with those 170 touches. So, like, the dude...
Yeah.
He scores points, you know, fantasy points, you know, when it's all said and done. I know we're not talking about fantasy points right now, but like he's definitely I really love the player.
Yeah, we talked about him a lot last week too, and I comped him to Christian McCaffrey, which I kind of stand by it. I think they're size similar, they have a similar style. So, but I think, you know, if you're going to be the presumed Alabama starting running back, and we're talking preseason All-Americans, I think you deserve at least a spot on the fourth team. I get that, you know, he put guys on there like, you know, Lou Nichols, who we talked about earlier, and Braylon Allen. I think he deserves a spot too. He's such a dynamic freshman up there at Wisconsin. But, you know, Gibbs, I think, you know, a player of that caliber who could, you know, take a game over really deserves to be in the conversation. Especially, I mean, you got guys like Chris Rodriguez on here, who's really just, you know, a fine running back, but nothing that screams All-American to me.
I agree. And there was the last one on the list was Rasheen Ali, another kind of like a Lou Nichols type, you know, just always going to be underrated, you know, coming from the CUSA and everything. So it's probably just, you know, people hate on those G5 schools, but that's probably enough about, what was his name? Phil Steele. And his preseason All-American list. Let's go ahead and get into some Debbie stuff. But first, I think we have another break.
My general rule of thumb, and it's not a perfect rule, but it's just a general sort of heuristic, is, you know, wide receiver owns their target share to the point of two viable targets. So essentially, I think if you have two target earners on the same offense, they can pretty much earn what they earn without impeding each other too much.
We've seen
examples with two wide receivers earning each 25% target shares in an offense. That happens. It's not super common, but that absolutely happens.
Another great clip. I don't know. I don't remember all the pods or what that one came from. Obviously, if Tommy was sitting here, he would he would definitely know what that came from. But it kind of reminds me of like AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. You know, I don't, beyond the what how you feel about Jalen Hurts, the fact that two good wide receivers are on the same team doesn't mean all of a sudden one of them is going to be bad. But I think that's some great points. But we're here talking about Devy football. This is the Full Tilt Devy podcast. And I'm being told that it was from the Ambiguous Wide Receiver show, which makes a lot of sense. So why don't we go ahead and get into some Devy ranking disparities? I think you guys did this on your last pod or the one before that. And it was definitely interesting to look at a couple different sites and figure it all out. But why don't you run us through it, Andy?
Yeah, it spurned some good conversation, I thought. So we figured we'd do it again. This is again specifically looking at Devy Royale and Campus Canton rankings. And same thing as last week, we're going to do, you know, one quarterback, one group of running backs, and one group of wide receivers. I won't spend too much time on the quarterback, but we're going to be talking about Jaren Hall from BYU, who's going to be entering his seventh season removed from high school, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
He was on, I think he was on a, you know, those BYU quarterbacks.
Yeah, he did a mission. He did a mission right. For 2 years, and then he's in his fourth year. He had some injuries, and I think after in 2019 he got hurt, and I don't think he's played or he hadn't played since until 2012.
Until last, yeah,
yeah.
So the Royale has him as their QB10, which seems very high, and Campus of Canton has him at QB37, so quite a bit lower. So like you mentioned, yeah, he took over from Zach Wilson last year. He had a good season, 64% completion, 2,500 yards, 20 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions. Good for a QBR of 78, which would be pretty good for a first-year starting quarterback. But like I mentioned, if it wasn't for him being 6 years removed from high school, he's going to be 25 by the time the NFL draft rolls around next year. So I would say to put him in your top 10 quarterbacks as a Devy quarterback right now would be like a Brandon Whedon level mistake, or John Beck if we're going to talk about, you know, BYU quarterbacks who were 25 when they were drafted. Yeah. So yeah, I'm staying away from. There's so many other options at QB10 that I can come up with aside from Jaren Hall. Not saying he's a good guy, good quarterback, but I don't think he's going to get drafted, and I certainly don't think he's going to be, turning any heads in the NFL.
I agree. One cool tidbit about Jaren Hall is he was the first ever black QB to start for BYU. So that is kind of a cool fact. But he has some history with the program and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, the fact is he's a 25-year-old, or he will be a 25-year-old QB if he were to enter the NFL next year. You know, going into, like, what did you say, a seventh season out of high school, you know, it's so tough with the BYU players because so many of them, you know, I remember last year, and of course now that, like, I have him on at least a handful of teams, but I can't think of his damn name. But there was a wide receiver that went to the Cowboys last year that, you know, did the same exact thing. Simi Fehoko.
Yes.
Yeah, it took me a second, but he went to the Cowboys, and, you know, like, he actually put up some decent stats when it was all, you know, said and done, but he went on a mission for 2 years before, you know, even starting college, and, you know, same thing, he's like 25 years old or whatever he was when he entered college, or when he entered the NFL. It's just so tough, and, you know, when I'm looking at these players, he has decent stats, but I don't want decent stats from a 25-year-old. I want amazing stats from a 25-year-old, you know, especially with BYU. Like, they're not playing anything, you know, substantial. So I need to see really, really good stats. And so while I can't say that he's just a garbage player, because, like, once again, the stats aren't terrible. I definitely see worse.
Yeah.
I can't say that he's going to be anything special. I really don't think he's going to be anything special. And having him at, what'd you say? It was QB10?
Yeah, QB10, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's just kind of throwing in the towel, guys. Like, I don't want to be a dick, but, like, we're there's other QBs that we can definitely put over Jaren Hall here. But on the other side of the coin, you know, QB37 for Campus to Canton might be a little crazy too, because there's probably not 37 QBs that have a better shot. We just saw Zach Wilson go number two overall in the NFL from the same team. So I'd say somewhere in between. It's got to be somewhere in between. It's not 10. It's not 37. Let's say 25. How about that?
That works for me. He's not a guy I'm going to be planning on drafting anywhere, but yeah, he had a QBR of 78, which is, you know, pretty darn good. It's hard to do an experience adjusted, you know, measurement on him just because he's so much older than everybody, but there's no denying, like, that's a good stat, you know.
Yeah, now I will say, like, Zach Wilson from the same team that we were just talking about was substantially better. So, you know, while I said that Jaren Hall is not bad, he's not as good as Zach Wilson. And think about how people are talking about Zach Wilson today in the NFL. So that kind of tells you everything you need to know. If he's not as good, then we probably don't need to be talking about it.
Right.
So that brings us to a couple of Michigan running backs that we have some discrepancies with.
Yeah, and not nearly as big of a discrepancy. Obviously, the two Devy running backs that we're concerned about in over there in Michigan are Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum. Both Royale and Campus Canton have Donovan Edwards as RB11. And Devy Royale has Blake Corum right behind him at RB12. Campus Canton has Blake Corum at RB23. Just to briefly touch on both of them, Donovan Edwards is a number four rated running back in the 2021 freshman class. He played behind Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum last year, the majority of his freshman year. He did seize that opportunity in one of Corum's injured weeks to explode for 10 catches and 170 yards. Blake Corum finished his second year last year with 144 attempts, 952 yards, and 141 yards and another touchdown. And I'm probably going to go out on a bit of a limb here, but I actually think Corum has the better season this year and is the better Devy prospect out of the two. Now, I'm not saying that either of them are very good because both of them are relatively undersized. Blake Corum comes in at 5'8", 200 pounds. And Edwards is 6 feet, 202 pounds. As a recruit on, you know, some of those services, he was listed as 190 pounds. So that's saying that he's already put on 12 pounds. And some of the guys at Campus Canton that do a lot of prospecting work will say, you know, an RB, a running back, can put on typically 12 to 15 pounds throughout their college career. So he's kind of like at his ceiling there. But just looking at the stats, obviously the sample size is lower with Edwards, and he was younger, albeit only by one season. But Corum was the better pure runner out of the two. He finished with 3.84 yards after contact per attempt compared to Edwards' 2.63. He's also more explosive with more breakaway yards per attempt. Corum had 3 breakaway yards per attempt versus only 1.65 breakaway yards per attempt. I did some work a little bit earlier in the season talking about breakaway yards. Typically, you know, your NFL running backs will all have over 2 breakaway yards per attempt in college. Like I said, Edwards is still a freshman. That number can obviously go up. But Corum also more elusive with 0.34 missed tackles forced per attempt versus only 0.17, so half as much for Edwards. Edwards obviously does appear to be the better receiver. But I think a lot of that's propped up by that one game where Corum wasn't playing, where he got 10 catches, and that was half of his season total. Neither of them are really great in pass protection based on, you know, what PFF says. So all in all, I'm leaning Corum if I'm going to take anyone out of the backfield. Like I said, I think both of them are undersized. I think Edwards just has those recruiting stars. You know, he's a high 5-star recruit or high 4-star recruit, sorry. Those star recruiting stars are shining bright and kind of blinding some of these Devy analysts. I could certainly be completely wrong about it. I might sound like an idiot in 6 months when Edwards, you know, is a game changer for the Wolverines. But just based on what he showed us last year, it wasn't near enough for me to just automatically say he's going to be the back to roster off out of Michigan.
Yeah, I really think. And honestly, I have them extremely close. And if we're, you know, talking about the actual rankings, you know, where We have the Devi Royale at RB11 for Donovan Edwards, and then RB12 for Blake Corum. It's very similar for me. I have them two spots away from each other. I have Donovan Edwards two spots behind Corum. Now, I get it. Like, it's tough because Corum doesn't have the size, but I believe he's a better runner. Then you have Edwards, who's not as, he doesn't have the vision, he doesn't have like the in between the tackles running ability as much, yet he has the size and he has the receiving, or you know, maybe a little bit more receiving ability. Although I really don't think that either one is bad as a receiver. So, you know, that's why I have them so close. It's really hard, but it could kind of boil down to a Javonte Williams, Michael Carter kind of deal. You know, where they're both good. They both get drafted by the NFL. You know, one's going to end up being better. Like, that's almost always going to happen. Like, one of them has to end up being better. And maybe, you know, it's tough to bet on the 5'8" guy. But at the same time, like, I honestly think he might be a slightly better player. But I think we'll also find out this year. And if you have him that close, it's probably not going to kill you either way. I think when you have the Campus to Canton guys having Corum at 23, that's when you're going to have a problem. You know, if you're just not getting any Corum and you only have Edwards and then Corum takes over, that's when you're going to start having issues. I don't think, you know, I get the size discrepancy or whatever you want to call it, but I don't know that it's enough for me to like completely freak out. There's 5'8" guys. There's 5'6" guys that make it in the NFL. You know, like I know they're outliers. That it doesn't happen very often, but it happens. So I'm not going to just completely give up on a guy just because he's a little smaller. And I mean, his BMI is great. It's not like he's 5'8", 170. He's 5'8", 200. You know, like he'll be fine.
Yeah, and you know, just briefly, you know, Donovan Edwards, you know, he's taller, but he's not really that much bigger. I'm not sure how much bigger he's going to get. I was trying to like comp him to a guy that, you know, what's his ceiling as an NFL prospect. And the guy I kept landing on was CJ Spiller, which he obviously had a couple of great seasons in the NFL, or at least fantasy relevant seasons. So I think, you know, if Donovan Edwards can become CJ Spiller, I think that's maybe the best outcome for him. Blake Corum's a little trickier to, you know, project with that 5'8", 200, but just looking what he's going to do this year, I think he's going to put up the better season and, you know, end up being the better running back on that team.
Yeah, I tend to agree, but honestly, it's one of those, maybe it's copping out, but I kind of like both players and I just kind of want to see how it plays out. And so that's why I have them as close as I do. And I just want to see what happens, but we're probably running a little bit long. You know, once again, I like to talk. So let's go ahead and dive into these Alabama wide receivers, because we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but man, there's a lot of these guys and there's differing opinions on all of them. You know, who's going to be the starter or who's not. And, you know, actually I'm looking at these rankings. There's one that is over 100 wide receiver spots indifference. Yes, you heard me correctly.
Yeah, that one's a little, I think that's another oversight by the Devi Royale folks, but the ones that were in the top 50, I didn't do all of them. I didn't put all of them on here, but there's four of them. Ja'Cory Brooks was wide receiver 8 for the Royale folks and wide receiver 17 for Campus Canton. Jermaine Burton, wide receiver 11 for Devi Royale, wide receiver 6 for Campus Canton. JoJo Earl was wide receiver 15 for the Royale and wide receiver 12 for Campus Canton. And then, yeah, Trayshawn Holden, Devi Royale had wide receiver 20. And I think that's just, they just haven't updated their rankings yet. But
that's the only thing I can come up with when I saw it. I didn't mean to cut you off, but it just, with Holden, there's other guys coming in, you know, like Ohio State isn't the only one bringing in, you know, like these top recruits and stuff like that. Alabama's still doing it, believe it or not. And I don't think that, I will say there's some articles out there talking about Trayshawn Holden being a wide receiver this year, like a starting wide receiver this year. So like there's people that believe it.
He could be. Like Slade Bolden was a starting wide receiver for them last year too, and he got drafted. I'm not saying the guy can't get drafted or like put up like 600 yards, but I don't, you know, projecting him forward to the NFL seems like a stretch.
Yeah, but regardless, 20 overall is wild. That's very wild. You know, regardless, like if you think you can get on the field and all that, I get it's Bama. You know, like you get that Bama bump, but yeah, I'm not moving them up. But why don't we talk about the other ones that we actually think might be something? So what do you think of Ja'Cory Brooks? We got the Devi Royale with wide receiver 8 and then C2C at wide receiver 17. Which one are you siding with?
So with all these guys, I'll listen to anyone's argument about either, you know, Ja'Cory Brooks, Jermaine Burton, JoJo Earl. If you want him, any of those guys in your top 10, I would say that's fine. If you want him to put him in there, you know, outside your top 10 in your top 20, like some, you know, you'll see with these rankings that, you know, they did that. That's fine too. Obviously, we know, like you talked about, the Bama bump exists. They've had a string of hits in the NFL. Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Calvin Ridley. Now you got new guys like Waddle, Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, even Ruggs before he went and did what he did. And then this season, Jameson Williams, who was obviously first-round pick, and then John Mechie, who I think landed in a good spot with Houston, who's going to get an opportunity early. Both of those guys can be long-term dynasty assets. So I think it's fair to prop up these guys a little bit. I don't think it's unwarranted. But this is a weird class, a wide receiver room for Alabama, in that this is the first year since, I believe, 2015 where they didn't return at least one of their top two wide receivers from the previous season. And on top of these four guys that we talked about, they've also got sophomore Christian Leary. They got freshmen coming in, Aaron Anderson, Isaiah Bond, Shaz Preston, Kobe Prentice, Kendrick Law, and then another transfer from Louisville, Tyler Harrell. So that's, you know, we're talking 10 guys just in this room who are high four-star, five-star recruits or hand-picked transfers by Nick Saban, just like Jameson Williams was last year. So if you want to take one of those guys at cost up in the top 20, top 10, I'm not going to say that you're wrong for doing that. I would just give my strategy, if I'm looking at the Alabama, would be to either diversify those top guys and, you know, try and pepper a little bit of each one across your leagues, or just take the values. If you can't get on any of those guys, pick up those freshmen or that transfer Tyler Harrell, who's not even getting drafted hardly in Devy leagues. So if you're in a deep Devy or, like you said, campus can't league, which you're going to be in, just scoop up all those guys, because you got to think at least one of them is going to be one of the top two receiving options for Bama at some point in their career. And right now, none of those guys have an ADP, even in the top 100 or a positional ADP above wide receiver 40.
Yeah, like you said, it is kind of weird that, you know, we don't have a returning player and all that. It's definitely a returning starter, I should say. But, you know, it's definitely like a new age for them. But we do believe in Bryce Young, or at least I do. And, you know, I think he's a good quarterback. I think he can get, you know, these players the ball. I like what you're saying about, you know, like differentiating or like diversifying with some of these players, because I don't have JoJo Earl that much further behind Ja'Cory Brooks. And I don't have, you know, like them all that far from Jermaine Burton, you know? So like, I really don't hate any of these players, and it's Alabama. So like, why would you? So yeah, just get a little bit of everything, you know, maybe. Even if you have to possibly reach a little bit, like reaching on an Alabama wide receiver probably isn't the worst thing in the world. But, you know, if you're like, all right, I have a lot of JoJo, I'm going to get me some Burton this time, or I'm going to get me some Brooks this time, or whatever it is. You know, like, you know, if you have multiple Devy leagues and all that kind of stuff, I would definitely diversify in this offense, because no one's truly guaranteed. I do prefer Brooks. But, you know, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that I can guarantee you that he's going to be the stud of the offense or anything like that. I just see, I would just prefer him over a JoJo Earl, you know, like, who's probably going to be playing more in the slot and things like that. You know, like, I see Brooks possibly becoming like a true number one at some point. You know, once again, not guaranteed by any means. But I think when it's all said and done, the important thing was talking about the actual rankings, and it's having Ja'Cory Brooks at wide receiver 17 seems pretty wild to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, Yeah, Campus Canton, they're down over there about Ja'Cory Brooks. I know there's a few guys there that really love JoJo Earl, which is probably why he's rated a little bit higher. But yeah, I mean, if you're taking a guy who's potentially going to start this year at Alabama in his second season, I think you could take a shot on him a little bit earlier. And Jermaine Burton might be a little too high over there too at wide receiver 6, because like we said, we exactly. don't really know what's going to happen. Like, Nick Saban's not going to tell us what he's going to do. Nobody thought Jameson Williams was going to be the, you know, wide receiver 1 over there last year, and then look what happened. So it's a lot to gamble at wide receiver 6 for Burton.
I'm siding quite a bit with the Devi Royale boys right now, because I had Brooks at 8, and I told you I'm lower on Burton than most. I have Burton at, sorry, I'm doing some quick math, 16. So I'm a lot closer to what Devi Royale is spitting out right now than what Campus Canton is. And then with Earl, I'm actually pretty close to both. I mean, they're 15 and 12, so like they're pretty close as it is. So I guess everyone's kind of saying like he's probably going to be on the field. You know, he's going to be a thing. I don't think he's going to be like a true stud or anything like that, but they obviously don't feel that way as well. I think it's when we get into the Trayshon Holden with the Devi Royale boys at wide receiver 20, like you said, and then the C2C boys at wide receiver 126. So, yeah, that's a little wild. I don't know that I agree with either one. Once again, I feel like it's kind of like in between. Like, give me like a wide receiver 70 or something around there, and, you know, even wide receiver 80 maybe. It's Alabama. You could probably even move him up higher than that. I don't know that Trayshon Holden's actually going to get on the field unless we have some like major injuries or like somebody loses their mind or whatever. But he's not a terrible player either. Now, I will say, like, I was looking, you know, like, I'm a numbers guy, I'm a stats guy, and I was looking at his high school stats, and sometimes they're difficult to come by and they're not always accurate, so I could be very wrong. But from what I was able to find, his high school stats were not that great. I think he was like a multi position player, and so like that's going to obviously hurt that it's going to hurt. I'm sorry, I was reading what Tommy T was saying. Is this what a real Devi show sounds like? that's going to hurt like anything if you're playing multi positions. Like, you're not going to have like prolific stats or anything like that. But at the same time, I think he had like 500 yards or something in high school for his senior season receiving wise. So it's really hard to fall in love with that profile at the very least. But I think we've talked long enough. We've talked about these Alabama receivers enough. You know, once again, diversify. Go get a bunch of them, because it's so tough to trying to figure out. This isn't Devontae Smith. This isn't Jalen Waddle. Like, they're not those guys. I like them. I don't love them. If we were having the same pod about those guys, I would have been like, buy all of them. I don't care where you get them. You know, just buy them. It's not that, but I do like the players. And go get you some Ja'Cory Brooks. I guess that's the last thing I will say before we go ahead and get out of here. Once again, I'm not your normal host, as you can tell. That's why we're going long here. I am John Arrington, Dynasty Coach A on Twitter. I'm generally speaking the host of the Monocle Dynasty podcast and the Devi Devotional podcast. If you like me talking a lot, then you will like my podcast. And Andy is generally the co-host of this podcast and is always here. So why don't you give us some final thoughts?
And again, you can find me on Twitter at AstarFF. I'm going to do a little bit of a Twitter thread about what I talked about with Donovan Edwards. I'll probably maybe catch some flack about it, but that's okay. But yeah, follow me there. Sometimes I'm posting threads and whatnot. And yeah, I'll always be here every other week and every week during the season here on the Devi podcast.
Yeah, and I was told by our fearless leader, Thomas Tipple, that I do not tweet a lot. And it's very true because I don't do the whole like asking questions and all that kind of stuff. I tweet when I actually have an actual idea, and that doesn't happen very often. This thing's busy doing podcasts. But you know, this is a lot of fun. I'm so glad we got to dive into some of these players. And you know, when it's coming to Devy, like, these players are going to matter. And you know, like, especially, you know, you're talking about Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum. Like I said, one of them is going to take a step forward. These Alabama wide receivers, one of them is probably going to step forward as like the one. We just don't truly know which one's going to be yet. So you kind of have to like latch on to whoever you think it is gonna be. But you know, once again, it doesn't hurt to hedge your bets at the same time. But this is a lot of fun. I appreciate it. Let's go ahead and get Lucas back on here if he has anything else we got to run, and we will get out of here.
No, great show, guys. Like he said, you all can catch the Full Tilt Devy podcast on the True North Fantasy Football Network of podcasts every other Thursday during the off season, and look forward to seeing you all on the Fantasy Walkabout on Saturday.
Awesome. Let's get out.